It sometimes seems Washington is consumed by a handful of big issues like Social Security overhaul, but hundreds of small, little-noticed political battles take place every day with far-reaching effects and some unintended consequences. NPR's Peter Overby reports on lobbying at federal agencies using one concrete example.
Construction makes up a huge part of the Florida economy. On a windy winter day in Orlando, Brad Staley pulls up his big silver pickup at one of his company's job sites. He's president of the Allstate Concrete Corporation. The job is at the Wet n Wild Water Park.
We're doing some remodeling of their pool facilities over here, decking and that type of decorative concrete.
Allstate Concrete is busy now, but for a while last spring, Staley didn't have any work to do because he couldn't get any cement from his suppliers.
They just keep saying, call back in a couple days, call back in a couple days. Finally, it turned into call back in a week, and then they finally said, call back the 21st of June. So we lost basically a month of work.
And what happened to all the guys who worked for Allstate Concrete during that time?
They were without a job. No income coming in, and nothing for them to do.
The cement shortage hit Florida and most other states. That's because about 1 out of 5 tons of cement is imported. Florida's biggest suppliers are in Asia, so Florida builders figured the cement was being diverted to China's growing economy, or else the China trade was tying up all the available ships. Domestic producers couldn't make up the difference. So, how about another source closer to home? Here's the economist for the National Home Builders Association, Michael Carliner, speaking at the annual Builders International meeting in Orlando.
It takes 40 days to bring cement from Asia, which is where our biggest suppliers have been for imports. It takes about 4 days to bring it from Mexico, and it doesn't require such big fancy ships either.
But not much cement makes that 4-day trip from Mexico. That's because the U.S. government levies a tariff on Mexican cement. The tax dates back to 1990. That's when the U.S. Commerce Department found Mexico's biggest cement maker, Cemex, guilty of dumping, that is, selling cement more cheaply in the U.S. than in Mexico. The Commerce Department was acting on a complaint by a group of U.S. cement makers. Leading the group were a Texas cement company called Southdown and a Washington trade lawyer named Joseph Dorn.
The president of Southdown came to see me in the spring of 1989 and said that his company was being hammered by low-priced imports from Mexico.
Dorn said the Southdown president was at his wit's end.
He really thought it was a desperate situation, and he didn't care how much it cost. He didn't care what the odds were. He had to do this to try to save the industry.
Dorn and Southdown organized a coalition of cement makers in the southern U.S. to file the complaint. Southdown was also working a political money angle. During the 1988 campaign, the company joined Team 100, a group of donors who contributed $100,000 each to help then-Vice President George H.W. Bush win the White House. Contributions like this, incidentally, are now against the law, but they were legal in the late 80s, and soon after the first President Bush took office, the coalition filed its anti-dumping complaint at the Commerce Department. The Commerce Secretary was Robert Mosbacher, the man who had organized Team 100. As the complaint was being filed, Southdown sent Team 100 another $25,000. Mosbacher told NPR in 1992 that Team 100 money didn't have any influence.
There's always a perception when people give large amounts of money, they expect something for it. Well, there may be some people who have that perception, but I can tell you that's not correct.
And lawyer Joseph Dorn agrees.
It wasn't by making campaign contributions or convincing somebody on the Hill that we were right. It was a matter of providing the facts.
Cemex had its own case and its own lobbyists, but Southdown won. The tariff stopped Cemex's expansion into the U.S., just as Southdown and its allies wanted. One of those allies is Phoenix Cement, a one-plant operation, part of a Native American-owned entity called Salt River Materials Group in Arizona. Brad Belt is the vice president of sales.
It really meant, for us, keeping the doors open, I think, in the very early years of the duty, because we were not profitable, and I think if we had continued going the direction we were going, we probably would not be around today.
And some 200 workers would be without jobs. The Southdown tariff has been renewed several times since 1990. The next hearing comes up this fall. But over the years, the battle has changed in significant ways. First, of course, the two governments have gotten into it. They have competing complaints at the World Trade Organization and other international venues. And under the current President Bush, the Commerce Department has paid more attention to the users of cement. The Home Builders Association and others argue that the tariff drives up construction costs. Grant Aldonis is the Commerce Department's Undersecretary for International Trade. He points out that users have no official standing under the anti-dumping law.
The way the law is written now by Congress, it doesn't allow the Commerce Department to take consumers' interest into account. It doesn't allow you to take into account the extraordinary circumstances you faced as a result of four hurricanes making landfall in Florida.
One possible solution is a deal. Mexico sets a limit on CEMEX exports. The U.S. lifts the tariff. But even that has a catch. Any one of the companies on Southdown's original complaint can block the deal. And here comes the other big change since Southdown's coalition petitioned in 1989. Globalization. Most of those southern U.S. cement makers are now owned by big foreign multinationals. In other words, the tariff battle has evolved into a fight mainly between corporate strategists in Mexico and corporate strategists in Europe and Asia. Ravi Sarathy is a professor of strategy and international business at Northeastern University. He says in a global economy, the Southdown tariff doesn't necessarily protect U.S. factories or jobs anymore.
You would assume that a higher duty would create incentive to invest in new cement plants to take advantage of that tariff wall that's been built. But that hasn't quite happened.
Sarathy says maybe investors don't want to finance U.S. cement plants.
Or it could be that people are worried that, in fact, the U.S. International Trade Commission might remove the duty.
Which would make U.S. cement plants instantly less competitive in a global market. In Florida, cement production is up, but the fear of shortages remains. Over the winter, Brad Staley says his Allstate Concrete has been getting materials on a regular basis.
The concrete company said that they would, you know, eventually work it out to where they could make sure that they were rationing it properly. Basically, they're rationing it.
But for Southdown, the Texas company that started the tariff war against CEMEX, the fight is long over. The tariff wasn't enough. Globalization won. And Southdown put itself on the market in 2000. 6 months later, it was bought out by CEMEX. Peter Overby, NPR News.